It's The Scratch with Joe Weston and Mike the Intern.
Welcome to another riveting edition of The Scratch.
Yeah, so that was entertaining.
That was good. That's our jingle. Yeah. We're going to have a great new jingle every episode of The Scratch. So just so you know, and you're in on the fun, every other week when we do these things, we each take turns of coming up with some sort of theme or subject we're going to talk about. Last week was mine. It was completely botched because this whole time I thought that poster was owned by Joe, and he was like, that wasn't my poster. I don't even like progressive music. Well, it still turned into a great conversation. So this week, it's Joe's turn. Hit me with your best shots.
Okay, we're going to go all high fidelity this week. You got a little, I told you this or talked about it last week. There's a phrase. I first heard it at Spin It Records many, many years ago at the corner of St. Louis and Glenstone, owned by Bob Pylon. And I would go in there and buy records. And one day, Bob wasn't working. I forget what the guy's name was that worked there when Bob wasn't around. But I bought Elvis Costello's My Aim Is True. And he said, this album changed my life. And I thought, wow. Really wasn't sure what to think of that. But since then, since that time, and I wouldn't say that it's just been one album, but I've had several albums that had just a huge impact on my life. So let's start with you. Pick at least one or two albums that you go, wow, this is everything, your view of the world changed after you listened to this record.
Okay, Computer would be the first one. I mean, at that point in my life, I was familiar with Dark Side. I was familiar with a lot of Floyd. I was familiar with a lot of records that were changing my life. But I think the one that had the biggest crack to the core was Them. And I realized that was my Pink Floyd. You know, that was my Dark Side of the Moon. I needed to own something. And what I mean by that is my daughter's 12 years old. And, you know, I've been throwing music down her throat since she could at least respond that she either liked it or didn't like it. And she likes a lot of the bands that I like, and she hates a lot of the bands I love, and that's just the way it is. But I was waiting for her to find that band like I did with, you know, Stone Temple Pilots, Nirvana, and then later on Radiohead and stuff like that, that would just rock her to her core, and that was Panic at the Disco. And I was so happy. That band's good, and whatever, it is what it is. They're not really my cup of tea, but for her to find something like that made me so happy. And it was kind of the same thing with Radiohead. I mean, that album came out, and I remember they playing Paranoid Android video late night on like 120 minutes or something like that. And I was just like, wow, that's Bohemian Rhapsody. But for us, that's our, you know, opus. That's mine, at least. And some people just can't shake it. But I would say at the end of the day, OK Computer, just because of what it is, what it shows you, the possibility of what a rock album can be. And no one else, I mean, at that point in time, 97, dude, there was nothing else like it. I say that in the mainstream. Failure did a record called Fantastic Planet, which I think is arguably as good as OK Computer. No one knows about it, but it's another one of those albums that I think is just like, man, crushing. So much work and thought put into it. I mean, every breath, every line, every change, every note, overthought. But and I'm sure to the detriment of them and their blood pressure, but you can tell like so much thought was taken on that record. It wasn't just let's hit it and get the energy. It was art.
Interesting. Yeah. I kind of thought that it would be a Radiohead.
Yeah.
I thought that it would be a Radiohead album.
Yeah, it's going to be all day. OK Computer would be the one.
All right. I've got two. The first one for me would be REM's Murmur, which was their first full length record. And I bought that album when it came out or a little after it came out because Rolling Stone picked it. I think it was 83 or 84, picked it as best album of the year. And I was really into music at that time, but not that deep into music as REM. And I had a guy that I had a gym class with. He played in a band here in town called Mass Man. His name is Mike Horan. And we were talking about it, and he goes, why don't you buy it? You know, anybody can manipulate me into buying a record. And so I went out and bought it. I listened to it. And the first thing I thought was it was really bass heavy, and it was really, it was almost country.
Yeah, it is. It has that feel.
It almost was almost country.
It's twangy.
So yeah. So I put it away, and then I went back to it later on. And after that, it's one of those albums. I call it musical sorbet.
Yeah,
it kind of cleanses my palate. It kind of changes things for me. Go back and listen to it again. And the extraordinary thing to me about that record is they're an electric band. They play, you know, you don't see REM whip out acoustic guitars,
not
but that
much.
Album is mainly acoustic guitar with Peter Buck. And it's this praise of Southern culture. It's this praise of even from the album cover, which is the kudzu taken over.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a beautiful shot. And that album from start to finish, I love that album's just extraordinary. Sometimes I get a little tired of Radio Free Europe, but most of that record just, and it really changed how I viewed music, and it changed me getting deeper into college rock, what they called at that time college rock.
Because if that was what that was, there had to be more.
There was a ton more. Yeah. They were kind of the Beatles of college rock, and Husker Du was The Who, and then my favorite band, The Replacements, were The Rolling Stones. And the next album that changed my life was Tim by them, Let It Be, from a really, really crappy album cover, a really terrible one. It was their first album that they recorded on Sire Records. It was produced by Tommy Eiderle, who was Tommy Ramone. And he was, anybody that knows The Replacements knows they're kind of drunks. They were drunks at that time. Really big drinkers, and Tommy was too, and so it was sort of a free-for-all in the recording, and I don't know that Sire Records was happy with what they got as the ultimate result, but it was an album that let me know that there was somebody out there that felt like I did, that somebody was speaking directly to me. And that's the way that I felt when I listened to the record, and that's, we talked about this last time, that as long as it speaks to you, no matter what it is, then you don't ever have to defend it. You know, you don't have to be you. If somebody comes in the room and says, "Oh, you like Donny Marie Osmond, you suck." Screw them.
Yeah, screw them.
Screw them because if it speaks to you, it speaks to you. It's what you love and what you listen to, and that was the album that like kind of just touched me. And said, "Hey, there's something more out here, and there's people out there that, you know, live in this non-perfect world." That's what I love about it.
Radiohead, going back and backpacking on what you just said about how it spoke to you. That was the first band. Like, I'm the type of person that when I was younger, I'm ebb and flows. You know, I love people. I love being around people. But with that, you also have the complete opposite where you internalize and you get lonely. And there's this loneliness and bleakness to what Radiohead's music is. And some people find it's too depressing. I find that it's almost a companionship in that, you know what I mean? In that feeling. And they get that perfect for me. And they are able to paint that picture perfectly for what the way I view it. And to like grab your hand in it. Which that's exactly right with what you said about The Replacements. It's the same way with Radiohead. My second, I did a podcast recently with someone, and they asked that, well, what's your top three albums, top three artists and stuff. And I can always usually give you the first two, the last three, the third one. I always say everyone else, because it always changes. And like when you were talking, I was like, okay, what would be my second one? What would be the one, another one that I would go back to over and over and over and over and over again? And I'll go back to my third. It would be Stevie Wonder's either Talking Book or Inner Visions. Those are masterpieces, and I could talk about that album and how amazing it is all day, and how much. And I've said this before. I said this last week. You know, if I had to go to an island, pick one genre of music, it'd be soul music. All day. That's what I'd pick, hands down. Because it's one style of music that can never get tired of. Rock, eventually I hit a wall with. Progressive music, hip-hop, any classical, anything, jazz, eventually I hit a wall. Soul music, for some reason, I never hit a wall with.
But I have a really fond affection for 60s soul.
Yeah,
I just love
all of
it. You know, Otis Redding, Sam Cooke.
Otis Redding, Sam Cooke, and then Al Green and freaking Isaac Hayes and all those
Marvin
guys.
Gaye.
Yeah, Marvin Gaye, dude. Yep. Like, it's just, since the godfather of it all, Stevie Wonder. It's just incredible. But if I had to pick number two record, I would have to say the one that I could always put on without thinking. Because what happens is I consume so much music. I'm constantly looking for new music, constantly listening to it, constantly eating it up. Eventually it becomes overwhelming. It's like all either there's too much going on or you don't know where to go next. And I think these records are those records we can go back to when we hit that wall. And the second record would be Getz Gilberto All Day. That record is a masterpiece. It is so perfect on every single level, song composition, production, vocal. I mean, everything that they did on that album is such a masterpiece record, just from a sonic standpoint, let alone just the idea that I can come back and listen to it over and over and over again. It's a great record. So yeah, that's kind of where, that's why I always go back to Getz Gilberto. That record is phenomenal.
I would say out of albums that led up to that, like Hootie Guru's Stone Age Romeo's led up to me liking The Replacements. There's a band that not hardly anybody knows about, but they played here in Springfield back in the 80s called The Dancing Hoods. They had an album called 12 Jealous Roses that's phenomenal. Mark Linkhouse, who went on to do Sparkle Horse.
That was
his band.
And then I love Sparkle. Speaking of that, It's a Wonderful Life. Phenomenal album.
And if I had to like do a more current record, it's Wilco's Yankee Hotel Foxtrot. That's such a musical sorbet record to me.
It is.
That I go back and I listen to it. And again, it's one of those records that I feel like it just speaks to me. I mean, you know, there's a line if I could come back new. And I love that line. I love that feeling. It's sort of like at the time Wilco was being compared to Radiohead. They were called the American version of Radiohead. I don't fully get that.
I don't understand.
But I do. Either. But I think it's just because they were being a little more experimental with Yankee Hotel Foxtrot. But I really do feel like they lost something when Jay Bennett left the band. I felt that he kind of was the guy that at one turn could take you more experimental, but could always bring you back into a really good pop song that you knew and he could take the experimentation that they did on that record and then bring it back into something you knew and you still felt comfortable with all of it. And I felt like when he, I know he and Jeff Tweedy had problems whenever they had problems. I felt like it was kind of the sort of a little downhill mark for Wilco.
Yeah. Bonus question at the end of this, you albums that changed your life. How about albums that saved your life?
I go back to Tim because it was a record where I felt like somebody was speaking to me directly that said, hey, it's okay. There's other people like you. Yeah. There's other people that feel the way you do. And then if I'm going to throw like a curveball out there, there's the guy that produced REM's first few albums. It's a guy by the name of Mitch Easter. And he had a band called Let's Active. And there was an album that he put out called Big Plans for Everybody. And at the time, most alternative records were kind of viewed as being, you know, downers. This album was positive and really uplifting, and I was going through a really tough time, and I went back to that record and listened to it over and over again, and it really helped me, made me feel stay positive. And one more, Chris Isaak's Forever Blue. I was going through a bad time. Yeah. Going through a bad time with that one when that record came out, and it was, again, if Chris Isaak can have girl problems, can go through being down about not having a girl or losing the girl, then I can too. And it just, again, it was a record that helped me get through some bad times.
Sufjan Stevens, Come on, Feel the Illinois. That would be one that saved dark time in my life, early 2000s, and that one saved my life over and over again. Still does. And probably XO by Elliott Smith. I think that's his greatest album. It's him actualized with the full band, and I think what ultimately he wanted or with the style of music that he was trying to get, but ultimately, due to his addictions, wasn't really able to get all the time on a consistent basis and settled for less acoustic, lo-fi, easier to do stuff. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, he could just play a song acoustically that he wrote and it would be gorgeous. but XO is kind of actualized. It's kind of like what Radiohead talks about Tom York. He can sit down and play acoustic all day and it'd still be amazing. But what they're able to do with that base of what he does as a band makes it that much better. And I think that's what why XO is so good. Is they, as a band, were able to take what Elliott did and make it full. And yeah, it's another one that saved my life all day. It still does. All day.
And we disagree about these things. I've played the Replacements for Mike and he doesn't get it.
I like the Replacements. It's just, you know, I'll never have that strong
and
tie.
And I've listened to Swift John Stevens and it just it doesn't really do anything for me. But I mean, we still love each other.
Yeah, we do. You know? But that's how families work.
Yeah.
You trade. Well, it has been a very good episode this week. Your homework, I guess, is to listen to the albums we talked about and find one that speaks to you like it does to us.
Yeah, you can always tell us about that. I'd like to hear from people and tell us about the albums that changed their lives and albums that saved their lives. That would be great.